fluid open sleeve.
Okay.
Big Horn Sheep Hunting Permit for 82,500.
And when our staff out there this year did their surveys, they recorded, they saw 991 desert bighorn sheep during the annual sheep surveys. And the result of that was we issued 13 desert bighorn sheep hunting permits, another new record. And 10 permits were issued to private landowners and 3 on our TPWD lands. So again, a program that is going well. I see Clay Blue back here and some of the guys that have been involved in this program a long time have seen it come from less than 100 sheep just not that many years ago to where we are today. And I don't know that there's 992, but there might be. 991 is a conservative estimate.
What kind of increase would that be from last year to this year?
I don't remember the numbers. Clay, can you tell from last year to this year what kind of numbers are Mike Burton?
About a 10% increase.
About a 10% increase? Yeah, that's very cheap.
Right.
And
so the population
is
estimated at 1,200.
Clay Greer reports that the population is currently estimated at 1,200. So that's good.
Okay.
The second annual Toyota Bass Classic Tournament, it's another date to put on your calendar, will be held on Lake Fork, April 18th through 20th, 2008. Toyota has again pledged a donation of $250,000 for conservation education and support of inland fisheries from the tournament. Another great event. Again, some of you were involved in it this year, and I hope you will all be involved in it in 2008. Finally, again, directly related to our land and water plan and initiatives, you've been hearing possibly some of the, and reading some of the issues about a location, a piece of property called the Christmas Mountains out in the Trans-Pacific of West Texas. And I noted as of yesterday that Commissioner Patterson had said that he was going to put on hold any further action on the sale of the property for at least 90 days, giving the Big Bend National Park the opportunity to meet or exceed the bids that they had accepted. Now, where we get looped into this was in the initial donation from the Conservation Fund Development Foundation and that group. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department was mentioned as one of the conservation agencies that they hope that the property might end up with one of these days. What I wanted to show you here, and I had Ted put up one of his maps, is approximately, I have this really handy-dandy pointer right here. Christmas Mountain is connected to Big Bend National Park right about there. I believe they share a common boundary, I read in the paper, they share a common boundary of about a mile to a mile and a half, a common boundary. The property itself has a perimeter of about 17 or 18 miles, but they share a common boundary with Big Bend National Park right in about there. It is from the edge of, from Solterrier, from the edge of Big Bend Ranch State Park, straight across, it is about 18 miles. So it is a very disjunct piece of property from our standpoint, and we never have really campaigned in any form or fashion to own or acquire or operate a piece of property. It has a very, very good conservation easement on it. When I say good, it has a quite an extensive conservation easement on it. Whoever ends up owning that piece of property is going to have to comply with that easement. I think most people would agree that if the National Park folks can come up with the resources to acquire the property, that's a suitable and natural fit. I would not recommend that we go there, but hopefully they'll get it resolved on the patent. To the best of my knowledge, there is not public access to it now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Bob. Committee item number 2, water legislation.
between the left ear and the right ear.
We are both the protector of the state fish and wildlife resources and the voice for those resources, and we have a seat at the table when TCEQ issues permits to use surface water. Personal wildlife staff reviews every single wildlife application in the state, and we provide recommendations to protect the fish and wildlife resources and habitats that are affected by those particular wildlife. If you don't know already, Texas operates under a prior appropriation doctrine, which is summed up as first in time and first in right, which means that a right is senior and superior to every right that's issued after it. The older the rights, the more valuable, the more reliable the right is. Water rights are issued in perpetuity. There are very little opportunities to go back and revise any conditions in those water rights. While the state has been issuing surface water rights since the late 1800s or so, it was only in 1985 that the state mandated that there be some kind of consideration of the impact of those rights on fish and wildlife habitat and water quality. And the majority of the water rights in the state, of course, were issued prior to 1985, so we have only a small percentage of rights with any kind of environmental protection conditions associated with them. So while the 1985 law is very helpful and necessary, the best thing they could accomplish was this piecemeal permit-by-permit approach to environmental protection, and that again placed the burden of that protection on all of those 1985 rights. You know, I'm going to concentrate on the environmental flows legislation part of Senate Bill 3, but and I'm going to say environmental flows a lot, but we always have to step back and remember that these flows are not just important to the environment, but they are in fact critically important to support the state's agriculture, manufacturing, hydropower, sport, commercial fishing, recreation, and tourism. Additionally, flowing water helps to filter and break down pollutants, and it provides really a primary means of protecting water quality, and it reduces the cost of industry and municipal, you know, wastewater treatment. Very, very important. Following what I would call some contentious water rights, some litigation and some previous legislative attempts, in about 2003, there was a meeting of the minds between water developers and environmental interests who got together and began exploring opportunities to sort of comprehensively address environmental flow protection and water rights, and to try to ease conflicts between traditional adversaries and different water users and water users. And so after a period of several state advisory committees and previous legislative attempts, the work of this consensus group between environmentalists and water developers culminated in Article 1 of Senate Bill 3 of the last session, which was a bottom-up consensus, which lay out a bottom-up consensus-based process involving stakeholders who would look at the local needs for their basin and take a basin wide approach for environmental flow protection. So this is just a quick schematic, I'm not going to go through it, of the layers of players in this new process, with this process replacing the current water rights permitting scheme that provided only limited opportunities for addressing environmental needs and only allowed certain parties to protect their legal interests in on that decision making. So our new process begins with a 9-member statewide environmental flows advisory group appointed by the governor, lieutenant governor, and speaker of the House. One appointee will come from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission. The advisory group will appoint this statewide climate advisory committee to provide technical support and advice for them and really throughout the whole process. The advisory group will also appoint each regional basin and Bay Area stakeholder committee that are going to be charged with recommending appropriate environmental flow regimes for your entire basin. Hope you can read that slide. SB3 sets out a really aggressive schedule for particular basins to complete their processes. And if you look at the map, you can see that the earliest deadlines come up in the eastern part of the state. And I think that was a recognition on the part of the legislature that that's the area of the state that may actually have water available to meet environmental needs, unappropriated water that may be used for these purposes. And so I can explain that, you know, simply determining the environmental flow needs within this process does not mean actually finding water or providing water to meet those needs. This is really just the first step of determining what we should be doing, you know, for each particular basin. You know, it's a whole other complicated issue to discuss what options we may have for finding water. As in this state, we have many rivers that are either fully appropriated or even over-appropriated. I should quickly mention before I was determined to get Simmons trying to down. I don't mention there, but one of the things that happened in SB3 was clarity over one option for finding water, which was the ability of a water right holder to use an existing water right converted to an in-stream use to meet environmental needs. And that's really going to open the door for private participation for protection of fish and wildlife through water rights. And Chairman Simmons was instrumental in getting support for the idea and getting that passed as part of the legislation. So quickly, you know, we have this big process. There are going to be these basin stakeholder committees with at least 17 members who represent a fair and equitable balance of interest groups presented to SB3. They will each appoint an expert client team to help them with the technical information and to guide them. Parcel modeling, CTEQ, and Water Development Board staff provide assistance to the client team and agency staff and the non-voting members of these teams. Having quite a bit to show you the tall order for this fair and equitable representation in these basins, there are going to be very disparate and competing interests that are going to have to work together side by side in a consensus-based process to tackle some really complex issues. This is a schematic of the process itself. Those were just the players in the previous schematic. And you can see that it's not necessarily a linear process. There are a lot of continuing roles for the players and a lot of overlapping opportunities for participation. So basically, this whole thing will culminate in the TCEQ conducting a rulemaking process. This whole thing starts with, and I think likely so, focusing on science. It's the expert science team that initially looks at the needs of the basins and determines what they think the environmental flow regime might be that is protective of that basin, that ensures a sound ecological environment. They will come up with a recommendation that has to be based solely on the best available science. And this is really important that, you know, the legislature recognize that you have to protect that science and keep it independent of policy. And I think that's important for the credibility of the whole process, so that, you know, the stakeholders are the ones that can deal with all the other policy and economic and, you know, quality of life issues that may influence, you know, the outcome of what they decide. And we may very well see some conflict between the technical answers, you know, the policy decisions that follow. I have this slide. This is the legislative definition of this environmental flow regime that these groups are supposed to be coming up with. And it's on there because it's extremely complex in its breadth. And it's something that we haven't done before. We haven't dealt that deeply if we haven't had the opportunity in water rights and environmental flow protection. And, you know, marshaling the science and the information that it's going to take to come up with, you know, consensus-based recommendation is a very deep task for both the stakeholders and, in fact, even a science team to agree on. So it's extraordinarily difficult. And you know, I think the experience is something very hard to suggest, but, you know, we're hopeful that it will be done. This is not about just taking some kind of minimum subsistence flow for critters, and there's certainly not going to be a one-size-fits-all answer. So the stakeholder committees will consider their science team recommendations. They will come up with their consistent with those recommendations, and then those recommendations are provided to the PCC, which conducts the full notice and comment rulemaking process that will ultimately end up in the setting of environmental flow standards that are adequate to support a sound ecological environment, to the maximum extent reasonable when considering human needs, that those standards will be applied to pending and future water right applications. If, for example, in East Texas there is water actually available and appropriated to meet those environmental flow standards, the TCEQ can in fact set aside an adequate amount to meet those standards, basically reserving it from appropriation by others. After the whole complicated process is through, SB3 goes a very welcome and a very innovative step forward and makes these flow standards subject to adaptive management. So they must be periodically reviewed and they may be revised. And permit conditions, which have previously been, hands-off standards, are now subject to a limited adjustment to reflect any revisions to the environmental flow standards. So this is a radical departure from the old permitting system where we had a one-shot-in-time determination of environmental flow protection and then that stuff in perpetuity. So I think that's kind of what they really recognize, the need for monitoring, for validation, for continuing study, and it really does mandate that we rely upon the best available data and science to make informed decisions. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Cindy Lesner, who is an expert scientist in our design.
Thank you, Colette. Again, for the record, I'm Cindy Leffler with the Water Resources Branch in the Coastal Fisheries Division. And just want to re-emphasize the importance of science, kind of following what Colette said a minute ago in the discussion this morning about much of what we do at Parks and Wildlife has got to be based on the sound science base. At the agency, along with Texas Water Development Board, over the years, we have been performing these legislatively mandated studies. These came about back in the 1980s to go out and determine freshwater inflow needs for the Bay and Estuary. So to make sure everybody is aware of that, studies have been largely completed for the two Texas estuaries, the seven major estuaries, and that information is available, and we consider it to be the best available science for looking at estuaries. Throughout part of this discussion, over the past number of years, there has been quite a bit of debate about the science, and including the Bay and Estuary Studies, the Science Advisory Committee that was part of one of the interim legislative efforts to delve into this issue of how to protect environmental flows, that took a very close look at the work that the state has done regarding freshwater inflows and has some very good advice for us. Some of it has been acted upon and other things we're still working on, working closely with our sister agencies, Water Development Board, TCEQ. But just to make sure that you're aware that this is going on behind the scenes and this information is out there. And on a similar note, with the rivers and streams, the Texas and Spring Flow Program that was directed the agency 5 years ago or so to look at and come up with the similar information for rivers and streams, the spring flows. Again, a joint effort with the Water Development Board, TCEQ. One of the things that Senate Bill 3 did for us was to extend our deadline for getting that work done. And of course, the law is the freshwater field division. In spring flow studies, and we've had our deadline extended until 2016, so that's a very welcome addition there, yes. Okay, and then these are some of the rivers and streams that are included in the SBT studies, as we call them, kind of shorthand, with the red segments being the priority segments that will be done sooner rather than later by 2016 for information that would be used then subsequently in environmental flow protection. Okay, so to shift gears a bit to different parts of Senate Bill 3 and Council 4, hearing Colette talk about Article 1, Senate Bill 3, this legislative session, that was one of the least controversial parts of Senate Bill 3, and one of the questions discussed, I think, to a large part, to all of the work that had gone before to get us to that point. But there were other things in Senate Bill 3 that also affect us. One particular area having to do with water conservation and planning. Bob Cook was very instrumental in some of the work that has gone on in the past with the Water Conservation Task Force. And the Water Conservation Task Force recommendations were carried over into Senate Bill 3, Article 2. So one of the things we're happy about is having this recognition in the Texas Water Code now that voluntary land stewardship is an important way of helping to enhance the efficiency and effectiveness of water resources in the state. I think we can give thanks to Mr. Cook and others who got involved in this effort to get that into the Water Code as state policy. Article 2 also requires the Water Development Board to develop and implement a statewide water conservation awareness program. Those of you in the Metroplex, and I think here in Austin this summer, we saw through the Water IQ campaign. That's an example of a statewide water conservation awareness program we became more of due to the Water Simple Creek. Water Conservation Advisory Council is created under Senate Bill 3. There are 23 members, including Parks and Wildlife. All of the agencies member on that council. There are a number of requirements of the council that you can see there having to do with new technologies and water conservation trends. An area that we're particularly interested in is this concept of monitoring implementation of water conservation technologies. Gallons per capita per day, GPCD, is a buzzword that becomes very important when you talk about water conservation. And one of the reasons it's a big issue for us, for wildlife, of course, is that water conservation is the most cost-effective, least environmentally damaging alternative out there for protecting water resources and creating water for future needs. So we like to encourage that wherever possible. Okay. This is one of the more controversial parts of Senate Bill 3, Article 4 having to do with unique reservoir site designations. What Article 4 does is to designate 19 reservoir sites that were included in the 2007 State Water Plan that the Water Development Board produced as unique reservoir sites. And what that designation means is that an entity of the state, another state agency, could not come in and take an action obtaining fee titles to the land or conservation easement or something like that would prevent a reservoir from being built there. So on that list of 19 reservoir sites, there are a few sites that contain some pretty high quality habitat, Martha Nichols and Joshua Reservoir being a couple of examples. So from our standpoint, we're concerned about potential habitat impacts. We're working with project sponsors wherever possible to try to minimize that, working on mitigation requirements, things of that nature. Senate Bill 3 also added a new requirement, I guess it is, that if an entity being a project sponsor does not show some affirmative action, take a vote on the project or take some action to provide funding or to begin permitting for a project by 2015, September 1st, 2015, then that designation goes away. That was not there before. On a similar note, also in Article 4 is the concept of designating ecologically unique stream segments. Parks and Wildlife compiled information at the beginning of regional water planning back in 1997 to help the regional planning groups identify which stream segments in their region could be characterized as ecologically unique. Things like, are there certain marine species? Are there wetlands, a number of things like that. Senate Bill 3, Article 4 actually designated of the 227, I think, segments we had identified, there were 15 that the legislature did actually give the designation of being an ecologically unique stream segment. What that means is that the state cannot finance the actual construction of a reservoir on that segment.
Would you go back to the previous slide? Rule that separate
All right, what that means, there was a concern, I would say primarily with landowners who were concerned about potentially having land converted to a reservoir site, that if this designation could cloud the status of their property. And so one of the compromises that was reached during the session was to include this stipulation that if a private sponsor, so a city or a river authority or some entity that would be pursuing construction of a reservoir, they did not take an affirmative action to show progress towards construction of the reservoir, then the designation of being a unique reservoir site would go away.
Is there a definition of expenditures necessary?
There was discussion about it, at the Capitol. There was not anything put in the warrant because of the report. So, I can remember there being some discussion in hearing that could be, filing, paying an application fee for funding for a waterway or CDQ. Okay, and then the last part of Senate Bill 3 is Article 12, having to do with Edward Obstacles. This is also another fairly controversial part of the bill. What Senate Bill 3, Article 12 set forth is a process that is being called a Recovery Implementation Program, or RIP for short. Has requirements there for the Edward Doctor Authority, along with a number of interested stakeholders, including Parks and Wildlife, to develop this recovery implementation program for threatened endangered species associated with the Edward Doctor. Fish and Wildlife Service also has a RIP process, a type of process that they do in other parts of the country, and they're interested in doing this here in the Edwards region. That is a voluntary, inclusive process. So, Any interested stakeholders are part of the process to do the same kind of thing. We've had a little bit of a challenge, so that is really on the front lines of this one, trying to marry the Senate Bill 3 definition that spells out who the members are with the Fish and Wildlife Services, voluntary, inclusive, everybody who wants to be at the table, gets to be at the table, kind of bring all of that together. And I think we're getting there, but Senate Bill 3 lays out a 21-member steering committee, so we'll have at least 21 members in this. Parks and Wildlife is also required to name a recreational interest in the Willoughby Basin, which y'all did at the last commission meeting. And now we're working on appointing a 15-member science committee. There are, I think it's 6 Parks and Wildlife staff members who have been nominated to be on that science committee. That's required to be done by the end of the calendar year. The heart and soul of Article 12 two things that play here. One was that Article 12 raises the pumping cap on the Edwards Aquifer. For those of you who followed along with the issues in the Edwards region over the years, it's all about aquifer levels, spring flows, protection of the ecosystem. So the pumping cap for the Edwards is raised from 450,000 acre feet to 572,000 acre feet. Hand in hand with that, though, is this requirement for the stakeholders, Edwards Aquifer Authority, Parks and Wildlife, and others, to work together and jointly prepare what kind of program document. This program document will need to have recommendations in it for how to adjust pumping limits over time to ensure the protection of the springs and the endangered species, certain endangered species associated with the springs, that protection is there. So it's, I think, a pretty tall order. This is something that's been attempted over the years, at least the last 20 years or so, and in a way this is the next iteration of that challenge. So with that, I think that's a very quick overview of one of those questions. have any questions?
Discussion?
questions? Hearing none, I will place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Committee item number 5, utility easement at Eduardo County.
Again, Kirk Engelman, the Land Conservation Program. This is the new WMA Round County. We have been approached by a company who has a grant for rural water development in the area of the new. They would like to put a 2-inch water line 10 foot inside the property, inside the fence line, which is a little unusual. You see they're running the bar dish. And this tape, as you can see from this photo here, there's no room between the edge of the road and the fence. This is an actual picture of the site. So we've had our biologists look at it. There will not be a negative impact to the area that's placed inside the fence. In exchange for the easement, they're offering all landowners whose property is oil problem a hookup, meter hookup to the water supply. And this is the item we'll see before tomorrow. The motion is before you. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll place the item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Committee item number 6, land donation and then bank transfer.
For the record, my name is Gordon Coleman. This is an item that was presented to you back in May of 2007. This was presented to me speaking with a landowner. He has consistently talked about donating a right-of-way easement to Parks and Wildlife and Parks. The easement is, you can see, the only access to the northern part of the park. I got, before talking to him about the deal, his intention was to donate the 2 acres on the. So he has given permission for a easement donation, and now we're coming back to say, well, we accept the 2 acre donation. And this is the motion.
In other words, as opposed to just a easement, he's donating the 2 acres.
He's got the land to it.
Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll take the side on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Thank you, Board of Committee item number 7, land exchange for City of County. Mr. Ted Osborne.
Chairman, Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Ted Oliver from the Land Conservation Program. This item remains Big Bend Ranch State Park. This is part of an ongoing effort to eliminate barriers to public use, to eliminate in-buildings, improve access to the park. Big Bend Ranch is a very important part of a larger scale, landscape scale, regional scale, conservation and recreation effort going on in West Texas. In this illustration, you can see the small in holding for blue. I say small, they average about 500 acres. We've been working with this landowner for several years now, and have worked out a deal whereby the small in holdings will be transferred to Texas Parks and Wildlife. We would transfer acres to the landowner, allowing him to consolidate his holdings into a single holding, shown with a black line around it. That area is carefully located to be out of all of the areas planned for public use and public access. The landowners should receive about 800 acres from Texas Parks and Wildlife. We'd be receiving about 2,667 acres from the landowner, including 77 miscellaneous in holdings. The one section he does want to keep, which is on the river, we would receive a 10-year renewal of public recreation easement across. There is an appraisal of those tracks underway. We expect there to be a small difference, and we anticipate that monies will be donated to pay the landowner the difference in those values. And at this hearing, this is the first hearing, this item, we're requesting permission to consummate a contract based on those terms. To solicit public notice for the comment to come back to us in the future with a recommendation. Do you have to answer any questions you might have? Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll ask staff to begin the public notice and begin the public notice in the process. Committee item number 8, land sale
Alexander. General Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Ted Hollingswood from the Land Conservation Program. The Lake Mineral Wells Trailway is a long, narrow strip of land that was a railroad bed at one time. When we bought the property, it came with a few odd tracts of land that really had no use. In fact, more of a liability than an asset for the trailway. Two of those are shown there. They are in the city of Mineral Wells. The adjacent landowners of both of these tracts is interested in buying those at fair market value. Staff recommends that we sell those at fair market value. And this is first reading. Staff request permission again to publish that. Solicit public comment. In this case, conduct a local public meeting and then return to the commission once that is concluded. Do you have to entertain any questions? Hearing no questions or comments, I will ask staff to begin the public process. Committee item number 9, land acquisition and grind plan. What's your name, Ed?
General Commissioner, good afternoon. My name is Lieutenant Hollingwood. The Land Conservation Program. This is the second reading of this particular item. Panthorpe Inn State Historic Site is a very significant historic site. The original church was built in the 1830s, added on to the 1840s. The history is well documented. The site is located in Anderson. And it's a very small site, currently 1.4 acres. Which limits the types of public programming that can take place. Also, much of the archaeological record is contained on the adjacent track. The track shown in red is for sale. We have a contract on that property at appraised value. This is the second reading. Staff recommends that we proceed to close and acquire that track. Maybe answer any questions you might have. The acquisition would increase the size of the site to 6 acres, and make it much more available for further history programming and other natural programming we currently have to do. That would incorporate much more of the archaeological work associated with the site. So we're trying to acquire for 20 years now, and the original owners passed away, and his daughters are going to sell us. Any questions or comments for gentlemen? Hearing none, I'll set this item on the third commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Moving on to the next item, committee item number 11, which is dealt with in the executive session regarding conservation easement in Bastrop County. I'll ask staff to begin public notice. Item number 12, acquisition of Big Bend Ranch State Park. No further action is required. The park regarding committee item number 13, possible land donation in Calicanto County. Again, no further action is required. Do you have item number 10, sir? Item number 10. Item number 10 pertains to a request for irrigation easement in an active event, the Walker Waters Wildlife Management Area. A little upstream from Brownsville and extremely south of Texas. In this case, the local irrigation district has been transferring the water to adjacent property owners through an irrigation channel for at least the last 6 decades. They want to improve the efficiency of water delivery by running water through 15-inch irrigation pipe. They approached us to advise that they were going to excavate the old irrigation ditch and place the pipe in the ditch. That ditch has vegetation in it.
and it's good wildlife habitat. Staff negotiated with the irrigation district and convinced them that that they should run a new line across the adjacent pasture and leave the old irrigation ditch intact and not disturb it. So they're going to abandon their easement on the old irrigation ditch in exchange for a new easement construct a 50-inch irrigation pipeline. It is in the best interest of the habitat at the site, and the staff recommends that we exchange the UTVs per the motion that you see tomorrow. If you have any other questions you might have. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I would like to decide on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment.
Yeah, I do apologize. Short term.
Maybe I need to reread. Moving on then, committee item number 13, possible land donation in Tolentino County. No further action is required. Regarding committee item number 14, executive director clerk. Excuse me, that's the facility director director position of current progress. Therefore, item number 2 on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda is withdrawn. And if there is no further business to be brought before this committee, I will come back over.
We're going to go to regulations committee next, but I'm sure the whole time.
Very well.
Adjourned.